Make your life better with a new job at UPS. Join Team Louisville as a warehouse worker, earn $14.50 plus up to $425 in weekly bonuses depending on shift. Search and apply now at upsjobs.com/Louisville. That's upsjobs.com/Louisville.
Exmark makes the mowers that care for the lawns that set the stage for the backyard life. As the commercial mowers more landscape pros trust, Exmark mowers get you on and off the lawn without compromising cut quality, comfort, or reliability. Exmark, official mowers of the backyard life, starting at $29.99. Learn about the available finance offers and check them out today at The Mower Shop, 7400 Preston Highway, Louisville, Kentucky, 502-969-6433.
CarMax is hiring experienced auto technicians for many of its 200-plus stores nationwide. If you're looking for a job where you can make a great living while working on the cars that you love, then CarMax is the place for you. Join CarMax to grow your technical expertise and work with state-of-the-art tools and technology. Work with the cars you love. Join CarMax. Apply today at CarMaxAutoTech.com.
Get ready for Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Dan and Mike.
And welcome back to Sports Talk with Mike Pratt and Dan Issel on ESPN Louisville on this gloomy Wednesday morning in Louisville, Kentucky. A little Motown for you, Michael.
Yeah, that was a great movie, wasn't it? I mean, that's not really Motown. That's kind of borderline.
On the fringes?
Yes. Yeah. Touching on the fringes. Yeah. McCream's laughing there. He understands what I'm saying. Great show, though, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's been viewed by many.
For sure.
NBA playoffs. Boy, Philly was a totally different team, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they were just like, they came out and put the ATL on their heels right from the start.
And you knew they had to. We've talked about it before. You let these young teams hang around, and they get more and more confident as the game goes on. And it was, in my estimation, Philly had to win that game. If Atlanta comes into Philly and wins both of them, they're in trouble. But you're right, Mike. They came out and they stomped on Atlanta from the very beginning. Did a great job on Young. Young had a pretty average game by his standards, certainly by the standards that he set here in the playoffs.
That's an excellent point, because I thought defensively, and I had made a note to myself, they changed defenses. They changed looks. Okay, and I thought, I thought that was done to Randall in the first round, where they changed the look defensively, and they forced him to take a quicker shot than what Tibbs wanted, and made some turnovers or take ill-advised shots. And I thought that's what they did a good job. Embiid did a really nice job defensively on the screen, the ball screens.
Yep.
He got out and showed big, and he was able not to let Young turned the corner real quick. When he turns that corner very quickly, he's got a head of steam. He's going north and south. They kind of fanned him out and made him use more of the floor to get to the paint. Mm-hmm. And then the backside, Harris and some of these guys on the backside, they were challenging at the rim. They were challenging Young.
Yeah, and you could tell that Doc had a little talk with his team, because they were certainly, especially on the defensive end, they were much more aggressive than they were in that first game. And again, with Young not having a big game, then you need to beat a Philadelphia. You need a couple of those other Atlanta players to step up and really have big nights, and that didn't happen last night.
And the turnovers in the first quarter, I think that Philly had 9 The first game in the first quarter.
Yeah.
And I think
yeah.
they had like 17 total. They had one in the first quarter.
Right.
And Atlanta was the one that was coughing it up.
Yeah.
Atlanta was turning it. I just think Philly's defensively, they were more aggressive. They rotated quicker. And, you know, this is pro basketball. You're not going to stop somebody. You can slow them down. Maybe get them to take, in your thoughts on this, some ill-advised shots. And if you can do that with a 24-second clock, then you're helping yourself, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, much like you mentioned Randall, you know, you get to a point where you put pressure on yourself because, you know, Randall's thinking, hey, if I don't get 25 or 30, we got no shot. And I'm sure that started creeping into Trey's mind last night, too. You know, and he starts taking quicker shots, taking some shots he wouldn't normally, putting pressure on himself to have that 30-point night. And once it starts going in that direction, it's real tough to get it back.
And two things I thought were really interesting in your thoughts on this. Atlanta, they had 11 turnovers in the first half, and Philly capitalized. And so many times I think when I'm watching games or doing the Kentucky games, I always go to the turnovers and points off turnovers.
Yeah.
I think that's really important. And Philly got 17 points in the first half off 11 turnovers.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. That points off of turnovers is much more important than the turnovers themselves. Because if you're turning the ball over and the other team isn't running out and not scoring easily off of those turnovers, it really isn't as important or isn't as big a deal as if you're giving easy baskets up off the turnovers. And that's what was happening to Atlanta last night in the first half especially, is they were turning the ball over and it was resulting in runouts and easy layups for Philadelphia.
Talk about easy. I always thought mentally that easy baskets was a way to define that situation you just described. So when I was with the Hornets, we were in at halftime, and Gene Littles asked me to say something or asked me when he was talking, Mike, what about this, and that? And so I said, yeah, we're giving up too many easy baskets. You know, that we just can't do that. I mean, we were having a discussion that you have in a pro locker room. And on the way out, one of the players tapped me on the shoulder and said, Mike, there ain't no easy baskets out here. And I looked at him and I said, okay, I think you're right. How about high percentage opportunities, okay?
Well, you have to think if you turn the ball over and you throw it up the court and let somebody run underneath it for a layup, in my opinion, that's an easy basket.
Well, how about, you know, you've never had to come off the bench, and I did. And, you know, when you come off the bench, you're in there for a couple reasons. One is to play defense and to slow somebody down, or to maybe ignite your offense mm-hmm. with a big play, maybe setting somebody else up to get things going, okay? Last night, do you know how many points Philly scored in the first half from their bench?
From their bench?
Yeah.
No. Zero?
Nada.
Didn't need them. You know, the Clippers had like 28 from the bench in the first half. Look what that did for them.
Right. The ATL had 32. Philly had nothing. Yeah,
the Knicks in game one of that series against the Hawks, their bench had like 60 bench points and they still lost.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I didn't recognize that or realize
it,
that.
It must be for coming off, when you come off the bench, you're...
Now, wait a minute. You can't talk about that. You've never had to do that.
No, I'm going to have...
Did you ever not start a game at any level?
Yes. My last year in Denver, we had made a trade. We traded Kiki Vanderway. You remember Kiki.
Sure.
Great, maybe the best first step I've ever seen.
Really?
I mean, he could put the ball on the floor and get by you in a heartbeat. Kiki was a different kind of guy. Still is a different kind of guy. Works in the NBA front office. But I love Kiki. Material things were very... I mean, he was a typical California guy that grew up in the 60s. And 70s, material things meant nothing to him. He wore the same white sweater
on every road trip we took one year. The same white sweater. And we go to New York and it'd be, you know, 8 degrees out, and he'd have on this heavy white sweater, and that was all he had.
That was it?
Yeah. Yeah, no, not a coat or anything. So, just a different kind of guy. And remember, he was, when he came out of UCLA, his dad played for the Knicks, and his dad was a doctor. And Jack, this is going to show you the difference in professional sports today. His dad was going to medical school in New York, and so while he was playing for the Knicks, and so one year he didn't go on any road trips. He only played home games for the Knicks and went to medical school when the Knicks were on the road. But the Knicks, I can't remember the numbers. The Knicks had like the 15th pick, let's say, in the draft, and they were all, they knew that Kiki was going to New York and play for the Knicks just like his dad. And Dallas had the pick before the Knicks, and Dallas picked him at like 14. And he and his dad went off and said, "We'll never play in Dallas." So they made Dallas trade his rights, and so they traded him to the Nuggets. And Kiki had a marvelous career. He just like me and Alex, he couldn't guard anybody, but he could sure score.
And he wasn't much of a passer.
No. None of us were. But you know what? To be honest, we ran the passing game, the Carolina passing game. Doug Moe, no set play. Nothing. You had like three responsibilities. If you got the ball, you could pass it and cut away. You could pass it and cut behind, or you could pass it and cut to the basket. And that's all it ever was. But we did pass. We passed a lot. And guys like Alex and Kiki, I don't remember them taking too many bad shots. If they didn't have a shot, they'd give it up, because you knew in the passing game, if we did it right, you were going to get the ball back. There weren't any ball stoppers. If you got open, you were going to get the ball. But anyway, so we traded Kiki for about half of Portland's team. We got Calvin Natt. We got Wayne Cooper, who was the center, and we got the guard that the Nuggets just retired his jersey. Anyway, and a draft pick. We got like three or four players and a draft pick for Kiki. And so I was at the tail end of my career, and for about the first half of that year, I came off the bench, and I was awful. I just couldn't make that adjustment. And then Doug finally put me back in the starting lineup about halfway through the year and was decent the rest of the time. But it has the going back to what my question was going to be, is it has to be a lot of pressure on people that come off the bench, because you know if you don't make an – I mean, you've got two, three, maybe 4 minutes to make a contribution. And if you play well, you know the coach is going to keep you in and you're going to get more playing time. If you don't make an impact on the game in that 3 or 4 minutes, the guy you came in for, he's coming right back in to get you. So there's got to be some pressure on people, and some people do it very well, and some people can't do it at all.
That's a fair point. And back in the day with 10-man rosters, if you played for a coach that put you in the first half and maybe you didn't make a lot happen, but you come out, the starter comes in, and in the second half they put you in again because there's only 10 men.
Right.
Now there's 15. And my point of this is Shake Milton, okay? Shake and Bake Milton. He comes off the bench in the second half, and he lights it up. Let's see here. I think he had 14 points in the second half and a couple really dagger-type shots.
Yeah.
And do you know where Shake Milton played?
I had no idea.
I have no idea.
SMU, I think.
Got it. You got it. You got
SMU.
It.
You're amazing. You're like a sports dictionary dressed up in a collared shirt.
But you know, that's
That's
yep, he did go to SMU. I was right.
But with 15-man rosters, he hadn't played. He had fallen out of favor, according to what I read.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I'm watching the game. I didn't know what – but I read after the game or this morning, he had fallen out of favor with Doc Rivers, which means that you weren't producing when you were injected
exactly.
into the game.
And that's my point. If he doesn't come in and make a contribution to the game immediately, he's still out of favor, and he's at the end of the bench for the rest of the game.
And he was there for a month or so. He was the guy that Doc went to a few months ago, whatever the timeline is. He goes to him, and he had some success, and then he didn't. So Doc had to find somebody else who he could put in the game, he could inject in the game to do something. So with a 15-man roster, if you get in the doghouse, yeah, baby, you might never see the light of day.
Exactly. You might be in that doghouse because, as you just mentioned, there's so many other options for a coach. Because a coach, you know, the starters are starters for a reason. And they're going to be, you know, absence of foul trouble, they're going to be on the floor for probably three quarters of the game. Would that be fair? At least 36, 38 minutes a game?
Yeah, I think
so. There's
fair.
Not very many other minutes for people coming off the bench. And like you said, with so many options, you know, you go two or three games without producing anything, and it's going to be tough to get back in that rotation.
And it would be interesting to sit down with a coach of an NBA team or assistant coach, ask them how they make up that roster beyond from 8 to 15, okay, because you're typically 7-man rotation, okay,
right.
Maybe 8, depends on the team.
Yeah.
But those other guys, how do they fill those slots? Is it like baseball where they have, four starters, 1 to 4, then they have a bullpen, and they pick their bullpen. They carry more pitchers now than they ever have. Used to carry maybe, you know, 3 guys in the bullpen, 4
right.
at the most.
Right.
Now you look at there's like 8 guys out there having a party, right? So I would be interested to talk to a coach about how philosophically what they look at, what they try to do.
Yeah. First of all, you try to spend as little money as you possibly can.
Now you're being cold now.
No. I'm serious. I'm serious, Mike, because you've got those starters, and I want to talk maybe in the next half hour, I want to talk about Nikola Jokic and winning the MVP. But I read, now that he has won the MVP, he's eligible for what they call a super max.
Yep.
And not,
yep.
not a maximum contract, a super max.
What is that, like
contract.
$300
million? It's $250 million over 5 years. $50 million a year.
Oh.
So, you know, you've got a salary cap. Now, you can go over the salary cap, and you can pay the luxury tax. But let me tell you something. The quickest way for a GM to get fired is if you're over the luxury tax and the owner's writing that big check to the league and you're not winning games. I mean, that'll get you fired. That luxury tax will get you fired quicker than anything. So you've got to have money in your salary cap to pay for those super max contracts. And so when you're talking about the end of the bench, the first consideration is how much are those players going to cost. The second consideration is the character, and because you've got to have guys down there that won't complain and moan all the time. You got to have guys down
happy with making the minimum
exactly.
of a million.
Exactly. Exactly. You got to have guys that'll come to practice every day and work hard and push your starters in practice. And I would say maybe third on the list, I can't think of anything else, maybe third on the list is actually their talent and their abilities.
Oh, that's an amazing observation. Really? Third? Yeah. No, I believe you, but you would think that it would be a little higher.
Yeah, but I'm not talking now. I want to make sure that you understand. I'm not talking about the first 7 or 8 guys.
I hear you.
You know,
I hear
that,
you.
I mean, talent is the biggest consideration. But you said those guys at the end of the bench, and I would say it's how much they cost, what's their attitude, and what's their ability. It would be third on the list.
And to your point. with that maybe is there's so much talent out here that those slots from 9 to 15, they're interchangeable parts. It's just a matter of money.
Yeah.
I mean, you're either tall or you're a guard. You either shoot or you play defense, and then you go from there.
Yeah, and now they make it even easier to get rid of the people because you got guys on two-way contracts that are down in the G League. You have guys in the G League that you can replace them with. You've got a 15-man roster. So it's even easier now to rotate those back-end guys in and out than it has been in the past.
Well, would you say that these two games last night, I think, kind of showed us where these playoff games are going? The aggressor, the winner, will be the team that's most aggressive. And I think Philly goes from being soft and lackadaisical in the first game. The ATL was taking it to them.
Absolutely.
Role reversal. Yeah. Yeah. And last night with Utah, I thought they came back. They were on their heels. The Clippers had them where they wanted them. Okay.
Yeah, and down 13 at half.
So the second half for Utah, they D'd it up, and the Clippers – they got six baskets in the third quarter.
Yeah.
Okay. And they were 5 of 16 with the threes. They were shooting threes, as everybody does now. In the last 20 minutes, they were 5 of 16.
Yeah.
And I know they just missed some. You're going to say, well, they did. But there seemed to be pressure applied in the second half by Utah. And Donovan Mitchell went off. But defensively, they turned around and were the aggressor. So my question to you is that a mindset? You know, Doc Rivers or whoever the coach is.
Ty Lue.
They're talking about being aggressive. They're talking about getting off to a good start.
Yeah.
Okay. But don't you have to have the mentality to come ready to play? And it's hard to believe, but some of these guys aren't quite at the edge for a playoff game that maybe they should be.
Well, you know, I'm going to give the Jazz the benefit of the doubt. And here's why. In the NBA, you know, college is different. You play a couple games a week. In the NBA, you're used to playing every second or third game. And I believe the Jazz hadn't played because they eliminated Memphis in five games.
Yep, and they had 6 days off.
Yeah, six days off. So that for an NBA team, that's a long time to be off. And so maybe there was a little rust there. So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. Philly, on the other hand, in the first game in Atlanta, there was no reason for them to be soft other than they had just taken Atlanta for granted. They, you know, they thought all they had to do was show up and beat the Hawks. And you know, you get to this point in the season, in the playoffs, where there's only eight teams left, and you better show up for everybody.
Well, I believe this in college. I've seen it in college, and now we're starting to see it in the pros. The three-pointer. I mean, they are – these teams are volume three-point shooters.
Yeah.
And you look for efficiency, which I totally agree with. But, boy, I mean, if you can't make threes, particularly down the stretch, if you're coming from behind, you can't win a game.
No.
You cannot win a game. You can't keep getting the three-point play the old-fashioned way, two and a foul.
Yeah.
Okay? You can't do that in catch-up, can you?
No, you can't. You can't trade. I wasn't very good in math when I was in school, but I don't think you can trade two-point baskets for three-point baskets and catch up. I just don't think it works that way. But having said that, I hate to see teams just stand at the three-point line and pass the ball around the perimeter. I like to see the ball go inside, come back out, and you get a much better look at the basket, a much better shot. And I think that's why the stat you just said about the Clippers and their three-point shooting down the stretch, I think a big difference is, you know, where that shot comes in the shot clock, how many times you've made passes, has the ball gone inside and been kicked back out. Those shots are a lot easier than shooting them under pressure.
And the numbers support that the two highest percentage types of threes are threes that come out of passes from the post or off of offensive rebounds, because that's where you're getting the ball, you're already facing the basket, and it's easier getting rhythm instead of passing around the perimeter. With the defense also, if it's one of those two cases, they're less likely to be in place, rotated correctly, right. And you're more open also.
Well, I can tell that by watching a game. I don't need some analytical guy to tell me how I'm supposed to get a three-point shot. Yeah. So you're agreeing with me.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Which means it's okay for me to talk.
Where do we plug in the fact that these guys like Trae Young and others can beat you off the bounce, okay, and get to the paint, and then they kick? It's very similar to a missed three.
It's the same thing. It's exactly what I was saying. Maybe the ball doesn't go to the low post and come back out for an open three-point shot, but at least there's some penetration with the basketball. You're just not standing there throwing it around the perimeter.
But if you watch them now, they got two guys, one on each side, just run and stand in the corner in transition. They just stand in the corner waiting for the kick.
Yeah.
So that's to your point.
Well, and I would say that those guys are guys that can shoot a three-point shot and probably can't do much else offensively.
Nice way to make a living, though, isn't it?
Absolutely.
All right, before we take a break, I got to show you something.
Is this your bat hat?
No, look at this. A guy sends this to us. He said, I'm Kentucky born and raised, but I graduated from IU Bloomington, 1971. And IU, that's a Crean shirt.
Yeah, Crean would wear that shirt when the guy goes back to Kansas City. When the big wig goes back to Kansas City, Crean will wear that shirt.
Oh, I think I've seen him wear one of those.
Yeah. I'd wear a shirt like that, yeah, for sure.
And it's got the new I don't know how new it is, but it's got the big Big Ten logo on it.
I tell you what, that's a crazy logo. I never understood that one. I know they wanted to change and sell some new things. Generate some revenue, but that big thing, you know.
Hey, it's somebody thought it was a good idea. It's a graphics. It's a graphics department. The graphics department and the analytical department are running most of these franchises programs these days.
I liked the old Big Ten logo better when they had. I guess they had 11 teams. That was the logo. Yeah. I like that one better.
And now they have the Big Ten has 14 or how many?
Yes, the Big Ten has 14 and the Big 12 has 10.
Because
we are really good at math in college sports. We promote being good at math.
We need to take a break, Dan Issel.
Yep, and we will be back with more sports talk and hilarity on Sports Talk with Mike Pratt and Dan Issel on ESPN Louisville.
Keep it locked with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Dan and Mike.
When he came across this young man sewing on a fiddle.
And welcome back to Sports Talk with Mike Pratt and Dan Issel. Like so many of my friends, you may be searching for your dream home, but be sure you get the best mortgage for that home. The folks at Stockton Mortgage are the best at helping people find a complete financing option that works for them. So don't wait. Get started with our favorite home loan folks at Stockton.com. That's Stockton.com, NMLS number 8259, an equal housing lender.
And we also have a big Wednesday always here at ESPN Studios.
Oh, it's
the food comes.
Yeah, it's Witch Wednesday at the ESPN Louisville Studios. Thanks to Jason and his team for bringing lunch by the studios today. It's a Witch Wednesday. Be sure to get carry out, curbside, or delivery from the Hurstbourne or Brownboro Crossing location for lunch or dinner. And they've got a new menu featuring the Cali Club, Wicked, and Italian Grinders. Order online or on the Witch app.
Now, you have something on your mind. Before we get to college football playoffs, yeah, we've got a couple of clips. You have something about your guy out in Denver, your guy.
Well, first of all, I want to come to Jack's defense. We have a disclaimer on the SportsCenter update, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, my bad.
Because as soon as he was finished with,
the
SportsCenter update, he said, that was crap.
Yeah. You know, I do it live. I like doing the SportsCenters live. I try to have them good, but every once in a while, there's a clunker, and that one was a clunker.
But there's a reason, Mike. Somebody came in and gave Jack a piece of bread from Jimmy John's, but he didn't have any water to wash it down with, and so he had a dry mouth, and so we're going to toss that one aside. Okay?
Yes, we're going to throw it out.
Yeah. That's a throw out race. Yeah, that's a throw out race.
Yes. I got spooked in the paddock.
I did want to just mention that I thought it was terrific that Nikola Jokic was the MVP. And when you see his story, I don't know if you saw the interview with him on TNT last night.
I did not.
With Ernie and Chuck and Shaq and Kenny. Very humble kid, for sure. And he said when he first started playing basketball, he said he had no idea about the NBA. He said he was just looking forward to making a club in Serbia and being able to make a little money. And then the Nuggets took him in the second round. And there are a couple of...
The second round. MVP.
The 41st pick. He is the first and only player to win an MVP that was a second-round draft choice. The only player ever. Just think about that.
Oh, I know. It's amazing. Denver has a scout, or do they... how do they work that Europe? I know some guys work Europe pretty well.
I don't know how they do it now. When we were there, we didn't have our own individual scout, but we had a scouting service that would report on the European players. But to find him and his talents at the 41st pick, and he's also the first center to win the MVP since Shaq did it in 2000. So it's been 21 years since a center has won the MVP the NBA.
That is a great point. Back in the day, you had MVPs Wilt, Russell, Lou Alcindor, a.k.a. Jabbar, Walton. Willis Reed.
Yeah, was Walt Bellamy ever?
I don't know, but he was good.
MVP.
I don't know. Yeah.
I'm not sure, but you're absolutely right. Twenty years since a center has won the MVP. But when you look and he won in a landslide. He got 91 out of 111, or no, 101. 91.
So 100 legitimate votes. Since Derrick Rose got a vote.
Embiid got one.
Yes, but Derrick Rose got a vote.
Derrick Rose got a vote. You're kidding
MVP.
Me.
Wasn't it 91 out of 101?
Yes. Yeah. So it's a 91 out of 100 legitimate votes because Derrick Rose was the illegitimate vote.
I can't see that one.
I got you. Okay. Some New York guy. So he won in a landslide. And when you look at his statistics, I mean, they're off the charts. He shot 56% from the field. 56%. This is in an age where you shoot 42-44% from the field. That's good. And I mean, he's not taking all crips either. I mean, he's out taking jump shots and three-pointers. He averaged over 10 rebounds a game, 8 assists a game. But here's the one I love. Here's the stat that I love. He played 82 games.
Wow.
Did not miss a game. And, you know, there's an old adage.
Sick or healthy, he showed
up. Yeah. There's an old adage that says sometimes the best ability is availability. And so,
I hadn't heard that one, Creed.
Yeah.
You got me there.
And so, you know.
But is Jokic a rim runner?
No, I don't know if I'd call him a rim runner.
He can run, though.
Yeah.
He can run the four.
Yeah. But I'm so happy for Nikola and for the Nugget franchise. You know, that's the first MVP the Nuggets have ever had in the NBA. So congratulations to him, and he's going to be well rewarded. I think it's not the end of this year, but at the end of the 21-22 season, he'll be eligible for the Supermax contract.
That's staggering.
5 years, $250 million.
That is staggering.
Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't you like to be his banker? Wire transfer my $50 million.
What do you do with it? I think we used to get paid. You could take a pick. You could get paid twice a month during the season.
Right.
Or you could get paid twice a month year round. You're making, let's say you get paid twice a month year round. That's 24 paychecks. And you're making $50 million a year. That's what is that? $2 million? $2 million a paycheck?
A paycheck. Paycheck.
On the 1st and the 15th, you get $2 million wired into your account. It's stupid money.
That is stupid money. It's a wire transfer me my $2 million. Good Lord. Hey, let's... let's talk a little college football playoff. I know we're both big college football fans, and Stuart Mandel was on the take with Andy Sweeney the other day talking about, and I think one of the main reasons before we get to Stuart is that, last year's playoffs with Ohio State and Alabama in the championship game drew an all-time low rating. Okay, for a college football playoff. I didn't know. I was reading that too, yeah.
And that's surprising because we were all at home with nothing to do.
There you go. That's where I was going. I can see attendance being down or nil,
yeah.
But everybody should have been watching. I guess we just got Alabama, Ohio State burnout. I don't know. But it was an all-time low for television.
Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson, and Oklahoma. That's all who's ever in the playoff.
Yeah.
Well, what does Stuart have
to say? Jack, you know why? Because the four best teams in college football are Oklahoma, Ohio State, Clemson, and Alabama.
Really? We got Stuart Mandel. Can you tee him up?
I don't know if, to be honest with you, I don't know if what we're talking about here is better for the Kentuckys and Indianas. It's definitely better for LSU, Georgia, like the next ones down that are good enough to make it more often than they do now.
Texas A&M, yeah.
If you're Kentucky and you're Indiana, I mean, maybe once every 20 years you'll break out and have that dream season and have a shot at the national championship. But as you know, like right now, if Kentucky goes 9-3 and goes to the Outback Bowl, that's a really good season, and their fans love that. And I just think once we go to a bigger playoff, none of that matters. That's the NIT, you know,
right.
Outback Bowl, which is January. That's the NIT. And so we'll see. You know, there's always unintended consequences. And while there's a lot of reasons to be excited about the benefits of a bigger bracket, I'm guessing there will be some negative things as well that you don't necessarily see coming.
What do you think of that, Dan?
Well, now if you had told me that the ratings for every other bowl game in the country last year were at an all-time low, I could get that.
Absolutely,
I agree with what he said that the bowls. I mean, it's nice for your program if Kentucky goes to a bowl. They travel well and it's fun. It's a nice reward for the kids. It's great. But outside of that circle, you know, who wants to watch any of these bowl games that really don't mean anything anymore? So and I agree. I think there should be an expanded playoffs with one anecdotal. I don't think if you're going to give the four schools we just mentioned, if you're going to give them a bye and make eight other teams play to play them, that to me that makes no sense. You're expanding the playoffs, but you're still giving the four best teams a big advantage by having a first round bye. I would love to see a 12 or a 16 team playoff and give some of these other schools a chance. It would certainly pique the interest. You'd rather see your team play in the quarterfinals or even before that in a playoff situation than watch them play in the Military Bowl. But I don't see why you would give the best schools, I don't think why you would give them an advantage. Do it like the NCAA. Start everybody off at the same time. And then I think you'd have something that people would be interested in.
You would like to see a 1-12 matchup with a 12 team playoff.
Yeah, well,
you can't do it with 12.
Well, the math doesn't work.
I would like to see a
1-16 matchup.
Okay.
Just like you see in March Madness in the NCAA basketball. Yeah, now, does a 16 seed ever win? No.
Once.
Yeah, but it can happen.
Sure.
It can happen. But to me, if you have a playoffs and give the best teams the advantage of not having to play the first round, you're in the same boat as you are right now.
Which at the end of the day, that's all college football cares about. They'd expand it to 12 because they know they can make more money by having a bigger playoff. And at the end of the day, they still only want the 3-4 teams that they care about to be in it, because that's all college football ever cares about is Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, Oklahoma, and Notre Dame.
Well,
I don't know if I would want to go to 16, because I think at that point you're getting teams that don't have a shot to win the championship.
Do you have
there? But
does 12 have a shot?
I think 12 has a great shot. I don't think 12 has a great shot. I mean,
You're not allowed to disagree with us. Turn your mic off.
At the root of things, I'm agreeing with you, but instead of 16, I would like to see it at 8.
Well,
I think 8 would be perfect, because you could have the five Power 5 champions get auto bids, which right now you have a system where you have four teams make the playoffs and five major conferences. So, I mean, like, it's just, again, college sports are bad at math. There are four teams in the playoff, five major conferences. But if you do an 18 playoff, all five conferences champions get an automatic bid. You give an automatic bid to the best group of five team, and then you have two at-large bids, so that if you have, your Alabama who loses a couple games, that you can still make sure they get in, so you can get your good old boys in.
Well, I've got a great solution. If you're tired of seeing the same four teams in, get a better football program. Get a football program that's able to compete with those four teams, and then we won't have this problem.
Well, I mean, these games aren't any good, the college football playoff games. I mean, this past year, Alabama killed Notre Dame, Ohio State kills Clemson, and then Alabama blows out Ohio State. It's like, yes, it's the same teams over and over again, but the majority of the games aren't close.
Yeah, but at least you're deciding it on the field.
Yeah, it's way better than the BCS. Don't get me wrong.
You're not letting a bunch of people like us who don't know what we're talking about having voting rights to see who the national championship is.
Yeah, there's no split national champions. Yeah.
To your point, to both of you guys, you know what the average margin for victory was in the college football playoff semifinals since they've had
it's something like 18 points, right?
19.7.
Wow.
Three of the 14 semifinals the last 7 years have been decided by 10 points or less.
So there really isn't four.
It's Alabama and Clemson.
It's two teams that stand out. Now, every once in a while, an Ohio State or an Oklahoma might sneak in there. But I mean, right now, if you're not Clemson or you're not Alabama, you probably don't have much of a chance of winning a national championship.
But it all gets down to money. So if you're going to structure these playoffs, you've got to give the higher seed, for lack of better terminology, home games. Games, right?
Because home games, I have no problem.
Which, okay. That would be really fun.
Yeah. Well, I was told a while ago about when this whole thing started, I've been an advocate of 8. I could live with 12, but I've always been an advocate of 8.
12 is better than 4. That's where I'm at on that.
Okay. Yeah, I'm with you on that. the NCAA, or not the College Football Association, CFA, who set this up. The NCAA's got nothing to do with it, right? Mm-hmm. So they said, well, maybe if we had more than two games, that fans wouldn't travel like they do for the NCAA tournament. You know, fans will travel. If your team plays in the first round, you win. Fans will travel to the second. Some, but not all. If you get to the Final Four, everybody wants to go, right?
Yep.
So they were afraid, I was told, that, you know, the fan base wouldn't follow these teams as they moved up the ladder with 8 or 12, that because monetarily those tickets are pretty expensive.
Pretty expensive.
But saying that, if you threw a home game in there that made it easier for those top teams to play and attract their fans before they have to go on the road, and most likely they would not have to go on the road with 8 or 12 until the championship game, right?
Yeah, or at least
semifinals.
The semifinals.
Excuse
yeah,
me, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's a great point. But, you know, fans, if your team, if you're a legitimate college football fan and your team has a shot to get to the national championship, I think you're going to go watch them. If you can afford it, you're going to go watch them wherever they play.
So you're saying to me that you would go to see a quarterfinal game on the hopes that your team makes the semifinals? Or
I wouldn't go anywhere because I've got a
unless
big,
a free ticket.
I've got a big screen TV, and I don't have to fly through Dallas to go watch it. So I wouldn't go anywhere. But you know, there are people that would.
You're saying that if Kentucky made the playoff and they're playing at Texas in a quarterfinal game, you wouldn't try to go to that?
Do I have to fly through Dallas?
Yes.
No, I wouldn't.
Let's say they're playing at Ohio State.
Okay, well, and I can drive?
Easy, yeah,
if I could drive. Yeah. If I could drive, yeah. If it was close enough to drive in five or 6 hours, I'd definitely go.
Well, this whole thing revolves around, we talked about name, image, and likeness. We talked about that, and Tim Thompson, our guest today, talked about that. It all revolves around more money.
Yeah.
More money.
No question. And you know, I can understand the college administrators thinking that way, because they basically got two programs that generate revenue. Some schools only have one program that generates revenue, and they've got to support 18 or 20 college athletic programs. So I can understand why they're always looking for more money.
Money talks and BS walks, right?
That's right.
So
that's right. And speaking of that, tune in tomorrow to hear another Sports Center update from Jack Green.
No, it'll be Process, who records his Sports Centers.
Oh, okay.
Which I love Process, but be a man and do them.
What a chicken!
Well, you got to take a look at your IU T-shirt before we leave here. All right.
Have a great day, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow.
Make your life better with a new job at UPS. Join Team Louisville as a warehouse worker, earn $14.50 plus up to $425 in weekly bonuses depending on shift. Search and apply now at upsjobs.com/Louisville. That's upsjobs.com/Louisville.
Exmark makes the mowers that care for the lawns that set the stage for the backyard life. As the commercial mowers more landscape pros trust, Exmark mowers get you on and off the lawn without compromising cut quality, comfort, or reliability. Exmark, official mowers of the backyard life, starting at $29.99. Learn about the available finance offers and check them out today at The Mower Shop, 7400 Preston Highway, Louisville, Kentucky, 502-969-6433.
CarMax is hiring experienced auto technicians for many of its 200-plus stores nationwide. If you're looking for a job where you can make a great living while working on the cars that you love, then CarMax is the place for you. Join CarMax to grow your technical expertise and work with state-of-the-art tools and technology. Work with the cars you love. Join CarMax. Apply today at CarMaxAutoTech.com.